And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's going on, everybody? DJ Bucky here, Move the Sticks. Although I should say, Bucky not here this week. Last week, I was on vacation in Hawaii, and Bucky held the fort down with Matt Money Smith, the new voice of the San Diego Chargers. Congratulations to Money. Filled in for me last week. And then this week, Bucky's out. So I've got a couple guests I'm going to have come on for the show today. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. I got Sean O'Hara, three-time Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champ, offensive lineman for the Browns and the Giants, and one of our great analysts and a good friend of mine going to come in. We're going to chat about some teams we see rising to the top, little rags to riches stories in terms of some offenses and defenses that struggled last year that we see having a big turnaround this year. So it'll be a fun conversation with Sean. Stay tuned for that. And then before we get to Sean, I'm going to have one of my good friends come on. I've been looking forward to this. Bob Welton, somebody I scouted with the Cleveland Browns back in the day, spent about a decade in the NFL as a scout, and then he left to go to the college world. And this is kind of an early birthday present for my man Sully here. So we got Bob Welton, who is currently the director of player personnel for the Tennessee Volunteers.
How about him?
All their recruiting stuff since 2013. So I'm looking forward to bringing him in personally, just kind of talk about some old times and then the difference between scouting high school players, college players, and really just trying to do something nice for my guy Sully here.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, DJ. Appreciate it.
Looking out for you.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I got to ask him about his favorite shade of orange, switching from the Browns to Tennessee Vols. That a little bit different. Some ties there, you know. But yeah, that'll be fun.
I'm going to put you on a pitch count.
Okay.
I'm going to say I'll give you two Josh Dobbs questions. Okay.
I wasn't even going to ask a Dobbs question.
Really?
Yeah. I was going to go more AK Alvin. His favorite Alvin story.
Kamara. I figured we can talk about the first round pick there to the Philadelphia Eagles too.
Oh yeah. So we got forgot that guy's name. What was his name?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Action.
Okay.
So we get a chance to talk about him and dig into some of these Tennessee players, and really just kind of curious the difference between scouting college kids versus high school kids. I mean, it's quite a projection when you're projecting, you know, a 20-year-old, 22-year-old to the NFL. I can't imagine trying to project when they start recruiting these kids, 16-year-old kids.
And how recruiting has changed over the past few years, just with social media and that I'm sure he's got a lot of in-depth knowledge about the involvement of recruiting and how it's just booming. With all the different camps, of course, Bucky's involved within them as well. So that'll be fun with Bob.
One thing real quick before we get him on, big news today was Bob Stoops stepping down and retiring, not resigning, from the University of Oklahoma. Lincoln Riley's going to take over for him. I believe he's like 33 years old, really
right.
A sharp offensive mind. So big, big shakeup there in the college football world. I've always heard Stoops' name kicked around a bunch with NFL jobs, and he's turned them down and hasn't shown much interest. But I wonder now, he's 56 years old, maybe he takes a year or two off and kind of recharges his batteries, and I wouldn't be surprised if he decided to get back into coaching if it wasn't at the NFL level instead of the college level.
No doubt about it. I think he's got a lot of years left. I mean, like you said, he's in his mid-50s. Normally don't see a guy step down that early. It's kind of interesting to see over the next couple of days if there's a backstory to that coming out of Norman. Because it is way too early for him. He's got so much meat on the bones.
I was driving. I listen to Sirius 84, the college channel, a lot when I'm driving into work.
I do too. Good channel.
About a month or so ago, maybe even longer, I know one of them on there had mentioned that Stoops had bought a house in Chicago. And that kind of was like interesting. That's weird. He just bought a house in Chicago. I mean, I don't imagine.
So the wheels started turning.
Yeah. So it was like, okay, maybe this has been in the works for a while. And this point in time, you know, if you wanted to hand the thing off to your guy and Lincoln Riley, there's no time for them to go through an entire search.
Right.
So it's a solid for Lincoln Riley, in my opinion, with the timing of the whole deal.
Exactly. That's the only way to get it to guarantee a handoff to your guys is the middle of June. Like what is Oklahoma supposed to do?
But they did say, hey, no interim tag. He's the guy.
Yeah.
So it'll be fun to watch what they do there at Oklahoma. They've kind of owned the Big 12. Fun. I think he's won 10 of the 20 championships since he's been there.
Unreal. Ridiculous. Speaking of championships, fun stat that's rolling around. Only four active head coaches now left.
Is this a stat from our guy Kent? This is a Kent stat.
Flying around on Twitter.
I saw Kent blast this out.
I think Kent probably did blast this out, but it's Saban, Meyer, I think Saban's got 5, Meyer 4, and Jimbo and Dabo with I think crazy, one apiece. Huh? That's wild.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, the guys all moved on to the NFL, or they're out of coaching right now.
Exactly.
So, pretty crazy. All right, let's bring in our guy Bob Welton here. All right, well, here he is, Bob Welton, joining us here. Old friend Bob, let me get this. I want to make sure I got it right now. 9 years with the Browns, although I would imagine it felt like 95 years with the Browns before you got to Tennessee in 2013. How long ago does that seem?
It seems a long time ago, DJ, that you and I were sitting in a room watching players together.
I know. Time does definitely fly. It was 9 years, though, right? Is that right? You were there 9 years?
Yeah, I was there 9 years, and I've been here 4, so it's actually 13 years ago. So.
Jeez. Holy cow. So explain to the folks what you did when you got there. You started out doing the Blesto stuff, right? So just kind of explain to what that is.
Scout. Yeah, you know, that's really the NFL now. I don't know if it's split even or by thirds. There's, you know, obviously you have national scouting and Blesto. And my real job was that my number one job for Blesto was I actually got paid by the Browns, but they put me in with Blesto, which they belong to the service. So I'd go out in my area and for the next draft class, so while everybody else was kind of working on the current draft in March and April, I was out looking at next year's class. And then the teams that subscribe to the Blesto service, then they get all my information to help their scouts know in that area where to go, where not to go, plan your schedule. You know, I think it's still the same, Daniel, you know, A, B, C schools.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of depending on the prospects, and that changes from year to year. But it just gives the schools, I mean, sorry, the teams that are in that system a little bit of easier idea of where to go the next fall. And you get all that information in May, and you can kind of work all summer on it if you want and kind of plan your schedule out off the information that I gave them. Then also the other big part of it was the background information that I would get. So that would help kind of form what your thoughts are on that player as you went in. And then obviously really in the fall, which just happened quite a bit, you might have a kid pop up at, you know, McNeese State that nobody knew about. And that was my job to go in and get all the information and make sure all the teams got that. So I did that for a full year before getting in the area and joining you in Cleveland.
Yeah, then you put in 7 long years, part of that staff there, you know, grinding away. How was it, the challenge? Look, I was there for 2 years. We had the 1 year we were 10-6. The next year, I believe, was 4-12, and then I was gone. But the challenge of being away from a team, being on the road when the team is struggling. I've tried to explain to a lot of people, you know, that listen to this, how it can be a thankless job, but man, it is even harder when the team is struggling. I imagine you had, as I did that second year, there's some long, lonely nights in hotel rooms across the country.
There is, and it's always the worst going into a school on Monday or Tuesday and off a loss. You know, and you're with scout, you're in a room with scouts that all won. That unfortunately happened a lot, DJ. And that was probably the worst part of it. But, you know, it was really, you are disconnected. And that's something that's part of the job that I don't think people, you know, they hear the NFL and you're a scout. It's a great job. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed it. But it is you're out on your own a lot. You know, you eat a lot of meals alone. You travel alone. I watched, you know, 90% of the games in those years I was there in a BW3s or somewhere, you know, or a Dave and Buster's or somewhere. I wasn't at those games. And, trust me, some days I was glad I wasn't. But, you know, that's the part of the job that really, for what I do now, I really enjoy now being connected to a team. And that's really one of the big reasons I was looking to do what I'm doing now is just have those relationships. You're in an office. You're around a team. You're around kids. You know, that's such a contrast for what I did for 9 years. But it's been a nice welcome surprise.
Well, I want to get to Tennessee and what you got going on there in just a second. But we've done it with all the guys we've had on, the general managers, different personnel guys. We've asked for their favorite kind of road dog scouting story. We've had from guys locking their keys in cars at a Virginia Tech game. Dimitrov came on and talked about riding around in his VW bug or in his VW bus. Or van, I should say, and sleeping in that thing. We've talked to Keim, I believe, talked about seeing the people up in the trees at Berkeley, which I know you got a chance to see that as well as I did.
Too. Yeah.
But what's your favorite road dog story from your 9 years as a scout?
I would say Montana. Went to Montana for practice, and I was going into school the next day. So I just showed up at, you know, 5 o'clock for practice, 4 o'clock to watch practice, was going in the next day. Got done with practice, a beautiful day. And, you know, Montana has that mountain there with an M.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the big M, block M on it. And there's a switchback trail that goes up, and people are up there all the time. And I said, you know what? Instead of working out today, I'm going to I'm going to trail up to the top of the M. So I change my clothes, get shorts, a t-shirt. It's still like, it's like mid-September, I think it was. So I go up, go back, you know, take some great pictures up there, great time, come on back down, go to get in my car. I have no keys.
You left them at the top of the mountain?
I'm hoping. I wish it was that easy. So I was like, well, I stopped at a few spots. Like, they got to be there. Yeah, I had kind of shorts on. So I go back up, asking everybody. Now, this took me, DJ, it took you about 35 minutes to get to the top of this thing, about 15 minutes down. So I'm going up asking everybody, have you seen keys? Have you seen keys? I get all the way at the top, check all over the place. They're still not there. I start back down, okay? Don't see them anywhere, checking, double-checking. I get down. Now, I had called a wrecker to come help me get in my car. Well, he sets off my car alarm. He can't get in. This guy with all these tools can't get in. So my car alarm's going off, and this guy across the parking says, hey, did you lose your keys? I said, oh, thank God. He's got my keys. I said, yes, sir. Thank you so much for my keys. Yeah, he goes, yeah, I left them at the top.
Come on.
No. So I get up. So the record, this is the great thing. The record guy that's helping to turn my car alarm on, he goes, okay, looks like you're all set. I'm out of here. So he leaves. My car alarm's still going off. Now it's about 8 o'clock. So it's getting dark. So I hustle up to the top. Keys are sitting right there where he said. All I can see in the parking lot are my headlights flicking from my car alarm still going off. I'm like, all right, I'm either going to get eaten by a bear or my car is going to die and I can't go anywhere. So the best part of it, so I finally get in the car and I'm shaking so bad because it's so cold at this point. I can't drive. Turn the heater on, just trying to get warm. I called the pro lays on it in Montana that I was going the next day. I said, listen, here's what happened. I'll explain it in the morning. I'm gonna sleep in. I'll be in about 10. Well, I come in the next day, and by noon, I probably had 12 calls from scouts making fun of me because the guy in Montana, told everybody. So
you won't hear the end of that.
No. So the heck of I still get two or three pictures from that M every fall when some scouts are there. So
that is beautiful. That was trust me, I've been there. I've stared at that M. I never ever in my wildest dreams had any desire to go up and visit it. Now I'm happy that I didn't. That's a Hall of Fame. That's a Hall of Fame story, Welton. That's nicely done. Hey, you get to the Volunteers. For those who don't know, a director of player personnel for a college program. A, when did this position kind of become vogue in college football? And then explain to people what you do.
Yeah, I think, you know, right when I was getting into it, a couple of schools had it. So that have been, you know, 2013, 2014, it probably started doing. I think Alabama was one of the first ones to have one. You know, I think that's what Ed did it. Ed Manowitz was doing their kind of thing. And then what I do basically on a daily, I think every school is a little different what they ask that person to do. But in general, you're overseeing the whole recruiting department, and it's a school like any SEC school. That's a lot of employees. That's a big job.
Give us a feel for like how many people you have working in recruiting, not coaches,
Yeah. And full-time guys, you know, 5 to 6, I would say. And then you get student workers, you know, you have, quite a few of those. And then, you know, you do have all the coaches because you're having to deal with them. And it's not unlike being a director of college scouting for a pro team, to be honest. You know, very similar in the fact that here's where you got to go. This is when you got to go. You're trying to organize that. You're communicating with those coaches all the time, just like you would a scout. So you got that aspect of it. But then the other part is the roster management of your current team, you know, scholarships, how many you're going to have next year. You know, how many running backs you need to take in, you know, 2 years from now. It's kind of a lot of that. You're forecasting kind of what the landscape is going to be and where your team's going to be 2 years, 3 years from now. So you can decide, okay, in this class, we have to have 3 running backs. We have to have, you know, we're only going to take 1 tight end this year. We're good, you know. So that's a big part of it, of the job also. And then, you know, we do a great thing here, I think, to get our kids ready for the NFL. We have an NFL readiness program that I do, just through the experiences of being in the NFL. And we look at it this way. It's a great way to, you know, coaches are going to coach you, and they're going to tell you how to be great, and they're going to teach you how to be great in the NFL on the field. But not a lot of people, DJ, like you and I have, we've seen behind the curtain, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, we know what questions are going to get asked. We know what a scout looks for at a pro day. We know, you know, who they're going to talk to when they come into the school and stuff like that, that you can really educate these guys. What, you know, that we take them through a combine interview, which is, you know, bizarre. It can be as bizarre as you'll ever see, and things like that, even how to dress and you know, just, you know, trying to take it through the eyes of a personnel person of what they're looking for. So I think that's been a big benefit for our kids, and I enjoy doing that, of course. It keeps me, you know, involved in that. And then, you know, I think just the relationships that, that I can have with the NFL people, you know, for 9 years working with them side by side, and, you know, I think they know I'll shoot them straight, and I know if I need help on a kid, and they're going to shoot me straight. So it's been fun, and like I said, the great part of it is you're involved and on a daily basis, and I'm actually on the field during games and not at a BW3s.
You get to experience so like the Hail Mary at the Georgia last year, right? That you were down there for that one.
Yeah, but I got to admit, I was on the way to the locker room. But
you'd already left. Nice.
Yeah, I was 1 foot in the locker room, but yeah, I did see it.
That is phenomenal. From the recruiting standpoint, I've always been curious about this. When do the kids first get on your radar?
Really, majority of sophomores, I would say, Daniel.
Okay.
That's probably if you had a look at the big picture. Of course, you're going to sprinkle in some freshmen, but I'd say as sophomores, you're really starting to put a good list together, you know, of your area. And it's just like in scouting, you know, our coaches all have an area, you know, mm-hmm. So they're kind of combing their area, and they're coming up with these names of the younger kids, and then we get to work on, you know, putting their profile together. So I would say, yeah, as a sophomore, I'd say majority of them.
Wow. And then how much difference can you see from a kid that maybe you're trying to project where they're going to go, and maybe you get in on a kid early like that, and then how much different can I just think about just my own kids. My kid's going to be a sophomore next year, and I just think about how much different she's going to, you know, look and develop mm-hmm. from now till 2 years from now. Be a totally different athlete. So I mean, what's the challenge then to stay on track with these kids and maybe drop some off while picking up some others?
It's everything's a projection. I mean, every single kid you look at is a projection at that age because, you know, you don't know. And some kids are, you know, some kids are young sophomores, some are old sophomores, which makes a difference. You know, that could be a year. And you're really trying to, you know, we spend a lot of time on looking at a kid that's a young kid. Even seniors' kids are hard. They change. But really, what features do they have? What attributes do they have that won't change? You know, if they're fast, they're probably going to stay fast. You know, mm-hmm. if they have 33.5-inch arms, they're going to have 33-inch, you know, which that's probably going to lead to pretty big kids. If they got big feet, you know, if the kid's a quarterback and if he's just got at that level, he's got a strong arm, you know, he's probably can continue as he gets stronger to have a strong, you know, so it's, you try to focus on those things you can kind of see, and they won't go away no matter if the kid, how much he grows or how much he doesn't grow. You can always count on that. That's probably the biggest challenge. Now, you know, again, it's just, you know, then you kind of get into, you know, the character of the kid and, you know.
How much harder is that? How much harder is that on the background information with high school kids as opposed to college kids?
It's probably the biggest difference, DJ, to be honest with you. It's mm-hmm. probably the hardest thing I think you have to come across, because when these coaches go out, I've always said this about high school versus college athletes. In high school, it's limitless. It's endless, the amount of kids you have to look at. You know, mm-hmm. there's always kids popping up. Well, at least in college, you know, you have schools you go to and that's it. So that's the hardest part. So these coaches go out on the road and they're only allowed out twice a year. They may have to hit six schools in a day. Well, they're not getting, you know, you're really only going to talk to probably the high school coach. And so the biggest thing for us is to get kids on campus as much as possible, because then everybody's around. You know, I can't go on the road, you know, and see kids. So that's my only chance to see them. Is you get them to camp, you get them to campus as many times, and then you can really kind of get around them. You're around the parents, and you try to do as much as you can when you have them to try to figure all that out. But it's extremely
difficult. on average, say, let's just say, throw out a number, say 25, right? You signed 25 kids on average since you've been there. How many of those 25 would you say you're able to get on campus to see them, you know, in terms of getting them in on campus for,
they're all,
for a
it's
camp?
It's getting a little easier, especially if, you know, we try not to go too far out of our area, you know. You know, the basis is kind of a 6-hour area radius of mm-hmm. kids. Now, Tennessee can go to California and pick a few kids and go to Texas. You know, we can do that, you know, fortunately, but we don't make a habit of it. We're going to mm-hmm. make our living in Tennessee, you know, Georgia, Florida, you know, North Carolina. So because of that, we'll get kids on. I bet an average, if we sent, you're talking about those 25 kids, I bet, I bet the average coming on campus 4 times.
Yeah.
Wow. You know, probably on an average.
That's crazy. Tell us about Barnett. You remember going? Were you there through that recruiting process?
Yep, we were. Yep.
So what'd you see in him? What'd you know you were getting out of him?
What you know, I talk about those things that you knew wouldn't go away. He was always the toughest guy in the field. When you met him in person, there wasn't a more serious, kind of ornery kid that you ever met. Not in a bad way, but the kid just had a chip on his shoulder, you know, and he had a feeling that wouldn't go away. So you knew he was driven. You knew he was tough. Now, again, he kind of looked like he does now in high school, to be honest with you. You know, yeah. He was 260 pounds. We really thought, to be honest with you, we thought he would grow into a D tackle.
Really?
And he just, yeah, we really did. We thought he would be that with his toughness. We thought he'd be a good fit for him. But, you know, he kind of kept his body kind of, his weight kind of always stayed around 268. And obviously, he was very productive. But the thing about Derek Barnett that, you know, really was us and Vanderbilt was in the recruiting battle for him.
That was it, huh?
Yeah, we had to knock off a trip to Missouri that last weekend that we were worried about. But that was really it, to be honest with you. And so he came in with a chip on his shoulder, was not a mid-year kid. So he came in June. About the second day in pads, he comes in, sticks a senior linebacker, he's on scout team, picks him up, strips the ball, covers the ball, and we're like, yeah, that kid might have something. And then from that point on, and really the rest is history because of what he did. You know, a kid's first defensive lineman to start in the history of this school as a freshman. And, you know, he took it from there. And there's just, again, his motor and his toughness never went away. And that chip on his shoulder never went away.
I have the same type of story. One of my buddies that played with him in high school, we were it's his first game his freshman year, and I was working on the video team. He's there right in front of us, and my buddy elbows me in the shoulders, and he's like, watch this freshman kid. And just during warm-ups, it's like, this guy is going to be special. You just knew.
Yep.
Derek Barnett scouting a freshman in high school story, silly. Way you come off the top.
No, freshman. That was in college. That was at Tennessee.
Oh, that was at college? Oh,
yeah, okay, that was at Tennessee. Yeah.
I got you. All right, well, Sully had a – I'm going to let Sully lob his Kamara.
Yeah, no. Oh, yeah, I got to say, that A – Alvin Kamara, fan favorite, just to let everybody know. He just in such a short period of time, I've never seen a Tennessee fan base really just love a player like Alvin. What's your favorite Alvin Kamara story? Because I know Saints fans are going to love this guy.
Yeah, they will. The best thing about Alvin, I would say, is that nothing really bothers Alvin. You know, he's just the same kid all the time. And he comes across, you meet him as this laid-back kid, but then you put the ball in his hand or you ask him, he really can do anything. And he's probably one of the better – I mean, he's got a great arm. I mean, our quarterbacks would stand all the time after practice and try to hit the goalpost, you know, from like the 50. Elvin would just come up, pick my hand, and do it on the first one. You know, the kid always – he's just got that kind of way of stepping up big whenever he needs to. And he's so laid back. But, you know, he's just – he just came in with, you know, especially his background. You know, you're a big shot at Alabama. Then you got to go to JUCO, which is, you know, always tough to do, especially for that path. And then to come here, and you got to realize this about Alvin. He's here a year, and he gets named a captain. And I think that said everything about Alvin. And he's, you know, again, he's the same kid every day. Nothing bothers him. You know, he was really the backup to the other kid for a while. Was fine. He knew I was going to get my touches and make my yards and score touchdowns. I'm good. And he's just a good teammate that way. And, you know, same thing, too, as a punt returner. There's some argument he might have been the best punt returner in the country. But we had Cam Sutton, who was the best punt returner in the country.
Yeah, right.
And so he just kind of waited his turn. He'd get one or two a game. And, you know, again, he's just a team-first guy. And I think that's what our kids, you know, liked about him is there was no big time to him. And he's a talented, talented kid.
All right, well, there's a bunch of other guys you had to get drafted here. First of all, I need to know how did it resonate inside the building? I don't know if anybody was watching the year before. When we all gave Charles Davis such a hard time about the University of Tennessee not having any draftable players, was that referenced at all inside the volunteer football program?
Oh yeah, yep. We keep a close eye on Charles. And, that was rough. That's why DJ. I'll be honest with you. I watched every round this year.
you wanted to soak it all in.
Yep, I soaked it all in for Charles.
Yeah, he was so happy, and he's such a classy guy. He wasn't really giving it back to me as much as he should. As hard as I was, for those that don't know, after last year, the Minnesota Vikings selected Moritz Boehringer from Germany. And so after he was picked, I told Charles on air during the draft, I said, wow, Germany's had more players picked than Tennessee. And so we got a laugh. Charles took it like a man. And then this year they came back and all these volunteers got drafted and he just sat back and smiled. He didn't even throw it back at me. And I think you guys are in a situation now that you guys, you and Butch, have been there for a while and this group's been there for a while and developing these kids, that I don't know that we'll see another year without a Tennessee player drafted for quite some time.
I certainly hope not.
Oh, by the way, last thing before I let you go, selfishly, was there did Appalachian State put a legitimate scare into you guys last year?
Yeah, I was scared going in, to be honest, because I, you know, scouting those, you knew how tough they were. Those are teams that are tough to open up with. And absolutely, I mean, my word. It was one of those things you always kept going through the games when, we'll end up beating them by 3 touchdowns. We'll get hot. And they just hung in there, tough kids.
I was upset because I thought we had a chance to lay in the weeds with Miami coming to Boone, which is still baffles me that they got Miami to come up there.
Yeah,
that we could have a chance. But then after we take you guys to overtime, then Miami we weren't sneaking up on them and they beat the brakes off us the following or a couple weeks later.
No, there was many times during that App State game I'm still wishing Daniel Jeremiah was the quarterback at App State.
Take Lamb over DJ. Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. Hey, give us a name. Give us one name. Give us one senior, if you can, for next year for folks, NFL fans that are watching the Volunteers next year, as somebody that we need to keep an eye on.
Well, senior-wise, it's a little hard because we had 3 great ones leave.
Yeah.
Our seniors next year really are kind of the steady Eddies. You know, we got, you know, Jayshon Robertson, who's been a 4-year starter at the University of Tennessee at Garden mm-hmm. Center. You know, he'll be a – you know, again, not one the fans watch much during the game, but he's just a good, good football player. And I do think we have the best punter in Trevor Daniel in the country.
Nice.
I know that doesn't get fans excited.
He threw down a 360 dunk. The guy's an athlete.
Yes. He is unbelievable, and I really think he's one of the best in the country. And then our young kids are what, you know, we'll have another class of juniors that we'll have to make some decisions, you know, which is really, let's face it, it's what you how you want it every year.
No question. You know, no question.
You know.
Who's the – Not that we're not encouraging any of these young kids. I hope they stay at Tennessee forever. But just in terms for me, is there one or two juniors that would be fun for me, just enjoyable scouting, just something for me to watch over the summer? Can you give me a couple names?
I think it starts with our linebacker, Darren Kirkland. Unfortunately, last year he had a huge injury in the Virginia Tech game and missed the bulk of the season. That was part of our struggles on defense. He's such a catalyst for us. But if you watch our bowl game when he was finally healthy, and, you know, if you were a scout and just watching the first 2 games in that one, I think you would like what you see. And if he stays healthy this year, you know, he should have a great year for us. And, of course, you know, Khalil McKenzie is always a kid you're going to talk about because of he's a freakishly athletic kid for his size. You know,
that's Reggie McKenzie's kid, right?
Yep. And true zero noses are hard to find, you know, and I think that's a kid that could have, you know, he's had a good career. Unfortunately for him, sometimes, you know, this goes as – He's having a great play because he's getting blocked by 3 people, you know. But as a scout, you look at him from a scout's eyes, you know, you see he does so many good things. And so those, and then Juwan Jennings, I think our receiver, who's had a knack for just some heroics over his career, short career so far. But, you know, Juwan's he's kind of got that Derek Barnett to him as far as just the toughness and a competitiveness that you just can't, you know, it's hard to match on Saturdays. And so, you know, there's just a few names there that I think are,
that's great.
Maybe some guys could have really good years.
I put them on the list, man. Well, hey, I appreciate you taking some time out over the summer here. I know you hopefully getting a little bit of downtime here before everything really cranks up. Everybody's back on campus. You guys are rolling. But I wish the Vols the best of luck this next year. And I know Charles Davis will be happy to know that we brought Mr. Vol on, Bob Welton, here to discuss discuss the guys, man. Hey, thanks a lot for your time, Bob.
Hey, DJ, anytime, man. Good talking to you, my friend. And hopefully talk soon.
All right, great to chat with Bob Welton there, getting a little Tennessee Vol information. I know, Sully, you love that. But now I'm excited to bring in a good friend here, Sean O'Hara. I like to do a proper introduction. He's 3-time Pro Bowler, Super Bowl champ. Sean, starting 135 games over your career, I want to start with this first question for you. I looked it up. Joe Thomas, 160 straight starts, which is ridiculous. But then I looked at Bruce Matthews had 244 straight starts. Is that the dumbest thing you've ever heard as an offensive lineman?
Oh, that's insane. Bruce should be bottling and selling his blood. You know, it's funny because everybody made a big deal about Brett Favre's record. You know, Eli's got a pretty good streak right now. I've kind of put quarterbacks in their own category. So, yeah, for an offensive lineman, and Bruce played it all. I mean, he moved over to center. You know, he was a guard. I think he played tackle, too. So, you know, he did it all. That's unbelievable. And here's the craziest part, too. I know a couple guys that played with him. They said they never saw him with an ice bag.
Bruce never had an ice bag?
That is unbelievable. Like, yeah, he never wore an ice bag, never iced anything, nothing. Guy's just a machine.
Like, explain that to people at home that don't understand. As an offensive lineman in the NFL, describe your week. You finish up, you play a Sunday afternoon game. Like, how is your body feeling on a Monday and a Tuesday?
Yeah, well, my first question would be, what's the surface we're playing on? You know, because if we're playing on natural grass, I'm going to feel 10 times better than if we played on turf. Now, the field turf that guys play on now and that I played on is 10 times better than that artificial turf that Bruce Matthews was playing on. And the stuff that you probably played on when you
that's what I played on in college. That was our home field, was that hard turf that would freeze over.
Yeah, oh man, it's terrible. And you know, it would, your joints would, you know, that turf would grab your foot even if you were wearing a flat-soled shoe. So you know, the surface is a big factor, you know, especially for offensive linemen, because you know, no matter how athletic you are, at some point you're going to end up on the ground. You know, for me, it was when I was pancaking guys. You know, but for some guys, it's, you know, for other reasons, they may fall down or trip or get beat. But
for those mortals,
you're gonna get dirt and grass stains on you at some point.
No question.
So that, you know, Sunday, like as I got older, DJ, you know, Mondays, you know, I always try to come in Monday after a game and get a good workout in, just because you want to get the sweat and the soreness out of you. You know, plus, you know, I was a Toradol guy. And so I would get a shot of Toradol on game day. And, you know, part of that would still be in me on Monday. So if I got a good workout in with that still in my body, I feel like I could work out a little bit harder. And you know, the soreness wasn't as bad. But, you know, as I got in my 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th, and 10th later on in my career, Tuesdays were the worst days. You know, Monday you would start to feel a little bit of soreness. But Tuesday, sometimes even Monday night, depending on how many snaps we had, you know, you typically average about 65 plays in a game. Offensive linemen take every single snap. It's not like running backs who maybe took 30 snaps, or receivers who are alternating, or D linemen who switch. So you feel every one of those snaps. And there were a number of times where I'd go out to dinner with my wife on Monday night, you know, or with a group of people, and you sit down at the dinner table, you're feeling good. You know, the wine's flowing, the beer's flowing, and you feel good. And then all of a sudden it's time to get up, and you can't get out of your chair because everything is worn off, the soreness is there. And you know, even in my last couple of years, I was sore on Wednesdays. It really wasn't until Thursday that I actually started feeling fresh.
Golly, that's what's so nuts about that. When I see 244 straight starts, I don't think Joe Thomas, I don't think has missed a snap yet, has he?
No, like you almost have to double it for him, because how many of those games was he actually even in? You know, when you're, I mean,
my question is, how does your shoe never pop off, or you know, you got your helmet comes off, you got to come out. How has he not come out for a single play?
No, it's like did Wickershaw Ferguson when he retired, and they said, look, he only missed one snap out of his entire career, and it was at the end of the game, and they put in Darrell Revis in his place so they could try that last ditch ever play. It's remarkable. I mean, you know, your chin strap breaks, you get poked in the eye, you know, like you said, your shoe comes off. It's really remarkable.
All right, here's what I wanted to get to with you today, why I wanted to bring you on. I wanted to look at some categories from last year where teams finished in the bottom five in the league, and then based off of what they've done in the offseason, free agency, the draft, and really getting some guys back healthy is a big factor, as well as some coaching changes. I thought we maybe could try and pluck some of these teams out of the bottom five that we think may be able to leap all the way up into the top 10 in the league, or at least make a drastic improvement from last year. So I'll read off the teams and the categories and just see if there's a team that jumps out to you that you think could make a push here. Last year, rushing offense, the bottom five teams, the Ravens, the Giants, the Lions, the Rams, the Vikings. Any of those teams, is there a team in particular you think could see making a major improvement in the run game?
Yeah, I think the last two that you mentioned are going to be really interesting to watch. Obviously, with Minnesota, you know, they've added two really good running backs. I know that losing Adrian Peterson is huge, but you know, you can't replace Adrian Peterson in his prime with one guy. So they know that. They try to do it with two guys. They got Latavius Murray from Oakland, who kind of looks a little bit like Adrian, and drafted Dalvin Cook. So I think that's a pretty remarkable 1-2 punch. Provided Dalvin can pick up the offense. I think coming out in this year's draft, Dalvin was probably the most complete running back. You know, obviously a lot of attention was paid to Christian McCaffrey and how explosive and electric he was, and Fournette as well. But when you know, I know you watched enough film on Dalvin Cook to see how many runs he made where he was bouncing off defenders and breaking tackles. It just seemed like every single game he'd have about 5 to 7 of those runs. So that'll be good to see. I mean, the question obviously with Minnesota, and you mentioned the health part, for them, just getting guys healthy. And they signed a couple of tackles, you know, Mike Remmers. And
how do you like that? How do you like that pair, by the way? I'm not a big Remmers guy, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think the bad taste everybody has in their mouth is still from the Super Bowl. You know, him playing right tackle and
yeah,
you know,
that's Von Miller though.
Still getting beat. Yeah, I mean, Von Miller makes a lot of guys look bad, but you know, he moved over to left tackle a couple times last year for Carolina, and he played pretty well. So you know, my big question for him is, you know, and I think it's Riley Reiff.
Yeah, how are they going to play those guys? By the way, will Reiff play on the left or the right?
I think you got to put Reiff in the left, and I think Remmers is more of a right tackle.
Yeah.
You know, here's the question with that offense is, if they're going to run that shotgun running game, you know, I don't think that benefits either one of those tackles, and I don't really know how much it benefits Latavius Murray or Dalvin Cook. I think that's one of the reasons why Adrian was okay getting out of there. You know, that single back run out of the shotgun position really limits you as a running back. You can't cut back. You know, you can cut up, and you can press the hole a little bit, but when you're running running the football out of that shotgun home position to the left or right of the quarterback, kind of limits you. So I'm curious to see Minnesota, but then the other team that I'm pretty sure you mentioned was the Rams. I'm really curious to see this offense with Andrew Whitworth at left tackle, moving Robinson in at guard, and then really just the Matt LaFleur effect. You know, Matt was with Kyle in Atlanta, and I thought some of the things that Atlanta did in the run game last year were certainly overshadowed by the passing game, but the way that they attacked defenses, the different running plays and running styles that they had, from a scheme to a zone concept to a little bit of trickery, I think that's going to pay some dividends for the Rams in that offense.
I think they did some things. Hopefully in the passing game, you get a young quarterback that gets better. You bring over Robert Woods. The early returns on Cooper Kupp have been good. Hopefully they're creative enough to do something with Tavon Austin. So hopefully that'll take some pressure off Gurley too, and they can get him cranked back up. But passing-wise last year, bottom five teams. By the way, I starred those two teams when I went through this as well, the Rams and the Vikings in the run game. But passing game, Browns.
Yeah, I think Gurley, just to throw something, you know, since I didn't say anything on Gurley, the one thing that jumped out at me last year, looking at his runs, you know, the funny thing is, everybody looks at the run game and they look at the yards per carry, and it's like, man, all right, if you had a down year, you only averaged, you know, 3.5 yards per carry or 4. The one thing that you end up missing with that a lot of times is the big runs. And Gurley didn't have many big runs. You know, 2 years ago, he had a ton of runs over 20 yards, over 15 yards. Last year, I think he had maybe, you know, 10 or less over 15 to 20 yards. They never had that big run play. And I think that's something that we'll probably see more of from Gurley next year.
Yeah, hopefully they need it. They need it a big way. So the bottom five passing teams, I mentioned the Browns. We've got the Texans, the Bills, the Rams, and the Niners. I circled the Rams here. I just kind of mentioned those improvements they made in the receiver position. Also, I was a big Gerald Everett fan, the kid they took out of the second round out of South Alabama. He's a really, really good player. I think he's got a chance to be kind of a mismatch player. But really, coaching, I think, makes the biggest difference for them in the passing game. Are you with me on that one?
Yeah, and you mentioned some of the receiver additions that they added, you know, and maybe not some big splash guys, but guys that have ability after the catch. And I think, you know, that's where you can really gain a lot of that yardage. That'll probably boost the offense. You know, you mentioned Tavon Austin, kind of getting him on the run. That should help. I mean, I think the 49ers are probably going to be better. And I don't think Brian Hoyer is going to average 340 yards a game, but I think
they were dead last year. I mean, they can't go any worse.
They were awful. I think the sleeper team in that, to me, is really the Texans. I just look at the explosiveness they have at the wide receiver position with DeAndre Hopkins, with Braxton Miller, with Will Fuller. I fully expect Deshaun Watson to be their starter. I know Tom.
You think week one?
I think he could start week one. Mm-hmm. And here's why. You know, you look at everything he did in his collegiate career. I think he lost three entire games in his whole career in college. You know, he finds ways to win. And it's not just, hey, I'm just out there making it up. You know, it's not just I'm going to scramble around and, you know, these Johnny Manziel type highlight plays. You know, he's making big time throws. They're always in big time games. And he seems to step up and play the best when everything's on the line. But I look at Deshaun Watson. He's got all the physical tools, but everybody that I've talked to about him, and I'm sure you've talked to a lot of people about him, and you know, you may have heard some of the same things. He gets it. And when I say he gets it on so many levels. Mentally, when you hear him talk about a game, he can break down a throw he missed in the second quarter. Hey, you know what? We got a really favorable coverage here. The X and O's in his mind, he's not going to struggle with that. And I think Bill O'Brien, you know, the way that he's learned how to attack defenses from his time in New England and working with Brady and the way that, you know, his mind works, I think he and Deshaun Watson are going to be a really good fit.
Yeah, look, I think we might see Tom Savage for a couple weeks, but I don't think it'll be long. You're saying week one. I would say by week four, I think we'll probably end up seeing him for all the reasons that you mentioned there. Let's jump over to the defensive side of the ball here, Sean. This one kind of blew me away. Looking at sacks from last year, the bottom five in the league, a couple of these teams. Kansas City was 28th in sacks last year with all the dudes they got. The Jets 27th. The Jets had 27 sacks last year. Then you got the Browns, the Lions, and the Raiders in that group. I mean, the Jets, that's a whole nother discussion. But the Chiefs and the Browns with what they did in the draft and those young guys kind of coming along. And I think even the Raiders, if you get a healthy Mario Edwards to kind of tag team what they have there with Khalil Mack and Bruce Irvin. Man, I was kind of surprised to see some of these teams down there. I'd expect more than a couple of these teams to vault back up near the top 10.
Yeah, I think the Raiders, you know, shoot with Bruce Irvin and Khalil Mack, you know, they could end up, you know, both having double digits. And I think, you know, Khalil Mack obviously getting as much attention as he did last season. You know, he'll see more of that, but he'll be more impactful. I'm shocked to hear that the Jets are that low.
They have no edge rushers.
They had seven sacks in week one.
Yeah. Well, they didn't get many. They got how many after that? They got 20 after that. The rest of the season.
That's. I mean, there's no excuse for that. When you look at the talent that they have, I mean, Leonard Williams, Sheldon Richardson, Muhammad Wilkerson. You know, they love the five down defense too. So they're all getting one on one matchups. So that really tells you how bad that secondary was for the Jets. And it also tells you how bad the offense was because they weren't.
It's getting
worse.
They weren't
playing with a lead. You know, they were playing 4-minute defense for a lot of the season. So that's shocking. Yeah, I'm shocked about the Chiefs too because with their pass rushers and with how good their defense has been and how aggressive they are, you know, I would expect them to bounce back as well.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Then overall scoring defense, bottom five here, Jets, Chargers, Browns, Saints, 49ers. I identified the Chargers. I was kind of surprised they were that bad this last year. But they've had some injuries. You get Jason Brett back. Bosa and Ingram, I think, are about as good an edge pair as we have right now in the league. And then I think Gus Bradley bringing his style in his kind of aggressive nature, I think they've got bodies that plug in beautifully into terms of how they play their front. I mean, I think you're going to see Evan Ingram will kind of stand up and be that elephant guy for him there. And you've got Bosa. You can move up and down the line of scrimmage. I know I talked to Bucky Brooks earlier today, and he had just visited with Gus Bradley, and he was pretty pumped up about what he has to work with and how these guys fit in.
Yeah, I think that defense, I mean, when they're very physical. And anytime you watch film on that front, you know, you mentioned keeping Melvin. You know, I think they tagged him. You know, that was huge. You know, he plays such a big role in that defense. You know, he can rush with his hand in the dirt or standing up. You know, Bosa is such a big force. I think their offense, their additions to their offense are going to help their defense. The fact that they actually invested in some of the offensive line, that's going to help their run game. You know, Melvin Gordon obviously had a much better season last year, but I think that'll, you know, keep that defense fresh. And, you know, one of the other teams you mentioned, we were just talking about the Jets, their scoring defense. You know, I think that they're going to have a big bounce back year. I know everybody's focusing on the offense and the lack thereof, but that defense with Todd Bowles and how aggressive he likes to be, and them getting Jamal Adams with a sixth pick, I mean, I think they're still tickled pink the fact that they were able to get that guy and put him into that defense.
It's going to be interesting to see how these teams kind of spin it around. San Francisco, dead last in scoring defense last year, gave up 30 points a game. I think their offense controlling the clock a little bit more could help them in that regard.
Well, and you know this too. You've been around football enough, DJ. When the defense knows you have no shot, they lose their will. And they just kind of, you know, the one thing that would happen, you know, I would do these O-line of the week awards, and every week I would start off with the top rushing offenses. Well, every week it was the 49er defense giving up the 200-yard games. And, you know, when you look at the talent that they have, you know, with how many first-rounders they had, DeForest Buckner and, you know, Eric Armstead, you've got some talented guys. Now you add in Solomon Thomas, you add in Reuben Foster, put him next to Navarro Bowman, that defense is going to look completely different.
Well, I'm anxious to see how these teams spin it around, man. I appreciate you taking a little time out of your schedule here. What was I interrupting you from? Golf? What do you got? Dinner? What did I keep you from?
No, actually, I just went over to the Giants facility and you know, as part of the player development program that we have going on over there, David Tyree is running the player engagement, player development aspect, and he asked me to come talk to some of the rookies. So I just had a chance to meet with all of them and got to meet Evan Ingram and Dalvin Tomlinson and, you know, Davis Webb, and I talked to some of those guys and just, you know, had a good opportunity to kind of just tell them what it's like to be a Giant, what's expected of them, and, you know, just kind of also welcome them to the family and you know, give them a little advice.
I love that. Look at that. Reaching out to a former Giant great, bringing him in there and letting you coach these guys up a little bit. Any first impressions from any of those guys?
Well, I tell you, you know, these guys are so young. You know, I don't know. Maybe it makes me just feel a little bit old, but seeing how young they are. But, yeah, nothing grabs the room like telling them that, hey, look, I made it as a walk-on at Rutgers and an undrafted free agent. I was able to play 11 years. You guys should be good. You could play 20.
Nice. Brady wants to play to his 55. Tell these guys to step it up. Let's go.
Yeah, Brady's got the he's found the fountain of youth. You know, of course, playing quarterback helps.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, dude, thanks for taking some time out and jumping on here. I'm hoping to set something up. We're working on it. We're efforting to get something put together with Sean where we can get Sean to come in on a weekly basis during the fall, during the season, and kind of give us a little O-line segment on Move the Sticks, which would be fantastic, dude. But, hey, thanks for taking some time out today, buddy.
Sounds good. Feel free to send some food my way as bribery. I will take it.
I know how to get to your heart. Oh, great conversation with Sean. Love Sean, one of my best friends here at the network. So hopefully we can get something done with him joining us on a regular basis during the fall. We're looking forward to having him back on the show. And thanks again to Bob Welton for jumping on. But now for the most important part of the podcast. Bucky's not here to help me out here, so I'm going to fly solo. But it's me undies time. That's right. You guys need to elevate your game to the next level. And I'm talking underwear here. That's MeUndies. What is MeUndies? Oh, just seriously soft, feel-good undies delivered right to your door. They're designed in L.A., made from sustainably sourced. What are they made from, Sully?
Micromodal.
Micromodal. That's a fabric 3 times softer than cotton. MeUndies, softer than soft. Lux undies. Coming in an ever-changing selection of classic colors, bold shades, and Bucky's favorite adventurous patterns. And so you can tailor your undies to your own personal style. I have them. They're the most comfortable underwear that I own. Trust me, these things are big time. Guess what? You can save time and money each month with a monthly subscription. And if you're not ready for that subscription, that's okay. And you can save. Guess what? We have a MeUndies 20% off your first pair. And this is a special URL we have right now. Sully, this
that's
is a
right.
Move the Sticks.
Move the special. Sticks specific. It is MeUndies.com/movethesticks. And your promo code is automatically applied. You can get a discount on your next pair of pizza underwear.
Oh, we've got I love the panda underwear. I'm telling you, these are the softest things you've ever seen. Rhett Lewis, who's been on the podcast, is a He's one of those guys that subscribes to MeUndies because he can't get enough. It's the best underwear going. So go ahead, revamp your underwear drawer. You deserve it. Once again, that's MeUndies.com/movethesticks. Is that right, Sully?
That's right. 20% off.
20% off your first pair. You won't regret it. And we need to get more people signed up on Move the Sticks than around the NFL because I know these guys like to keep score.
They do. They're the ones that push for these personalized codes for that very reason. And they might have a pretty big lead because their podcast yesterday, I know because I produced that as well.
Yeah, and, that paints me, but go ahead.
Right. I know. I'm sorry. But they put out a call to action. They said at noon today Pacific time they needed all their listeners to go out and simultaneously go order.
Well, here's where I think the Move the Sticks podcast has an advantage. Okay,
that's right.
This is not scientific. Our listeners wear underwear. Okay, so that's what separates us from the NFL podcast. So I think we're going to be able to beat them in this contest.
Right.
Now, if we were talking about trying to sell toasters or some other gag gift, maybe around the NFL would have a shot, but not on this subject.
No,
our folks are underwear connoisseurs, and I think they're going to step up.
Yeah, this is not the first pair of underwear they will purchase. Yeah, no. So they know what they're talking about. This is going to replace
old underwear. This is not going to be a new addition to a wardrobe, which would
be
the case with all their listeners. But anyways, I think that's going to do it for us here today. Sully, fun episode, huh?
Great episode. Talking Hoggies,
beefy.
Talking Vols, beefy. It was fun.
All right. Hey, good job by you. Hopefully we have Bucky back in the mix here soon and we'll get back to rolling here. But that's going to do it for us today. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for leaving those comments on iTunes. Appreciate you guys keeping those coming. We are having a lot of fun here in the off season, and I'm telling you, football is right around the corner. We've got you covered from now till then and already coming up with some fun ideas for the fall. I think you guys are going to appreciate. Until then, we'll see you next time.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to nfl.com/podcasts.